One.
There we go.
Ah, the old mute button.
Does that mute it for you? Just me?
No, it doesn't mute you. That's nothing funny. Mutes you for me.
It's up for grabs now! Thomas! Right at the end!
Aguero! I swear you'll never see anything like this ever again! So watch it! Drink it in!
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Final Countdown, a podcast looking back at great finals within the game of football. I am Lewis, here with my co-host Adam.
Hello.
We are continuing our series looking at the English First Division. We're approaching arguably the greatest decade in the world, the 90s, but we're not there yet.
Oh, yeah.
But we are going to get straight into the report today. It's the 1986 to 1987 season. So we're looking at a three-headed race as we head into the final days.
Three-headed race?
Cerberus, the guard dog of hell himself, has not had a three-headed race this competitive. But it's a title race that goes down to the final few weeks, not the last day of the season. We don't get that much drama.
No.
But we are looking at Liverpool, Spurs and Everton.
Oh yeah, the mighty Blues. Line.
That's right. So Everton have lost 40-goal striker Gary Lineker heading into the season.
One-season wonder.
Yeah, amazing. He only had one season, but what a season it was.
It's because of the World Cup.
Yeah.
It changed it.
Do you think if he'd only scored three goals in the World Cup that Barcelona wouldn't have gone for him?
They were saying it was on one of them rest of football.
Oh, yeah, one of our rival podcasts. Yeah. Equal footing.
That's right. I was busy spitting on the podcast, but he talks about the fact that his hat-trick in Poland changed everything for him because he got a move to Barcelona because of the World Cup.
Right.
So it wasn't on before the World Cup.
Which is crazy, isn't it? 40 goals in English top five.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. You'd think that would be more impacting than six goals in...
Yeah.
Four games, or whatever it was, five games at the World Cup.
Yeah. But yeah, Gary Lineker goes off to sunny Spain to go for Barcelona, where he would famously score a hat-trick in El Clasico, not that he likes to talk about it.
No.
But Liverpool are the reigning champs, and it's Spurs who aren't necessarily a surprise, but when you look at their squad, what a squad they had this year. So here's a few names just to whet your whistle. They've got Ray Clements from Liverpool. Then they had Gary Mabbott, Neil Ruddock, Gary Stevens, Chris Houghton, Paul Allen, Glenn Hoddle, Steve Hodge, John Moncur, Vinny Samways, Chris Waddle, Ozzie Ardiles, Clive Allen, Paul Moran, and Nico Claesson, to name a few. That is an incredibly strong squad.
Did you say Clive Allen?
Yeah.
It is a great team.
It's a really strong team. So.
And the fact that they don't win anything with that team is quite bad, isn't
it? Yeah, well, we'll talk about them a little, obviously, in regards to the title race, but also in regards to the FA Cup, which we'll talk about. But so really, it was a three-headed race between those guys. Everton would end up clinching the title, though. It was the year of the mighty Blues, as you said, as Tottenham couldn't handle the games coming thick and fast. At one point, we'll touch on it, but they had five games in hand on the two teams above them. And it was Liverpool's lack of defensive solidity that would cost them. They kept on kind of losing games 3-2. They were, unfortunately, despite the fact that they had plenty of goals in the team, they couldn't keep it tight at the back. So at the other end of the table, the end of the season saw Newcastle in a whole load of trouble, but managed to pull out some late final form in the last few months to avoid relegation.
Nice.
At one point, I think it's 5 weeks from the end of the season, Newcastle are rooted bottom of the league.
Undoing Keegan's great work.
Exactly. But they managed to rise to the surface.
Nice.
And managed to stay afloat. But the same could not be said of Aston Villa, however, who would consign themselves to rock bottom of the league.
They go down.
Villa go down as the worst team in the first division.
God, that's surprising because they run United quite close, maybe 5 years from now.
Oh, interesting.
At the top of the league.
Yeah. What a like roller coaster where, you know, a few years ago we're talking about them being champions of Europe.
Yeah.
And of,
what a decade.
Yeah. Wow.
High and the low. The high and the low.
So that's the final days of this season. But let's look at the season as a whole.
Pizza Hut pan pizzas, unless I'm mistaken. Come on, Gareth, it only took me 6 years to get over it. Have some pan pizza.
So, as I mentioned, headlines were made as Gary Lineker left Everton after only one season, after his outstanding league season, even better World Cup that we've spoken about. The Charity Shield friendly is shared between Everton and Liverpool.
Is it?
Yeah, the Merseyside derby has drawn 1-1. They didn't have penalties, they just shared it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because it was essentially a charity game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It just... even adds even more fuel to the fire that not nobody real. Took it seriously.
Yeah, they all mix up in the photo, don't they? Like the
That's right. Yeah,
I've seen a few people have drawn it. Yeah,
yeah. But the season would start brightly.
Roy Keane be spitting feathers at that.
Oh, absolutely. What isn't he spitting feathers about?
Standing together with a trophy.
If you're not headbutting someone in the tunnel, are you really up for the game? That's really what he's thinking. But the season starts brightly for Liverpool, which was not a surprise. But Wimbledon, West Ham and Tottenham start rotating the top spot as well. So early on over the first kind of 6 weeks, Wimbledon, 2 months. Wow. Yeah, Wimbledon have a really good season this year. West Ham, not as much, but Tottenham make a bright start. You'll notice Everton, not in that. In early on, the first couple of months, Everton kind of languishing late. In mid-table.
Yeah.
But it's Man United that surprise everyone by dropping to bottom of the league.
Wow.
So Ron Atkinson comes under a lot of pressure following a 3-1 defeat with this side second from bottom, just one win and 4 points from their first 7 league games.
Wow.
So it truly is like bad stuff.
And they were an all right team.
Yeah, exactly.
They won the cup final 2 years before that and second in the league the year before, third in the league.
Yeah, wow.
Crazy.
Yeah, that is amazing, really, that big Ron's kind of dropping off a cliff at this point.
Yeah.
2 months into the season, sees Nottingham Forest top the league. So there's been a real rotation. I know it's only 2 months in, but a lot of teams remain
competitive.
You wouldn't
have that now, would you? It's crazy.
No, exactly. Yeah. Like, after the first 3 weeks, it tends to be one, like, surprise package and then everyone else.
Yeah, all the normals.
Yeah, exactly. Surprisingly, Norwich and Coventry City are also up near the top of the table. So it's a real, like... Mm. Yeah, hodgepodge. I don't know if that's...
Steve Hodgepodge.
It's a real Steve Hodgepodge. That's terrible. Up at the top of the league. But come November, Southampton would beat Man United 4-1 in the League Cup at the Dell. Famous for two reasons. One being the result that cost Big Ron his job. They fire him shortly afterwards. And an 18-year-old striker, Matt Letizia, scores his first two goals
Shut
for the
up.
Club.
Yeah. Really?
So in a famous win
for
Southampton... obviously, yeah, getting Big Ron sacked, but going through in the League Cup at the Dell. It's 18-year-old Matt Letizia, he scores two goals.
That gets Big Ron sacked, is it?
That gets Big Ron sacked. So he's replaced by former Cup Winners' Cup winner, Alex Ferguson. Mm. So he'd obviously done a great job with Aberdeen.
Yeah.
Had helped kind of break up the usual Celtic Rangers winning. He'd won the Scottish Cup, he'd won the Scottish League, and the Cup Winners' Cup with Aberdeen.
Yeah.
But that's, I thought he had... done that the season previous, and that's why he gets his United job. It was like two or three seasons ago that he wins Cup Winners' Cup with Aberdeen.
Wow.
So it was not necessarily like fresh in the mind.
Did they win the league, Aberdeen?
They did win.
Were
the
they
league.
The last team not who was Celtic Rangers? I think we've looked this up before, haven't we? Sorry.
So since 1980, if we go back that far, the only teams to have won the league that aren't Rangers or Celtic were Dundee United. That was 1982.
Right.
Whereas the next two seasons are Aberdeen, where a young Brian McClare is top goal scorer for Celtic. And then Frank McDougall.
As he was known back then, Brian Ferguson.
Quick, get the name changed, quick. Oh, it was a house fire. I lost my birth certificate. This is terrible. But the wonderfully Scottish named Frank McDougall is top goal scorer for Aberdeen in the last time that a team that wasn't Celtic or Rangers won it. So that was 1985.
Still to this day. That's
still to this
day. Wow, that is crazy.
After that, it goes Rangers, Rangers, Celtic, Celtic, Rangers. I'm not going to carry this on because it's
been there for a while, mate.
Yeah, but you get the idea.
I do.
It is astonishing. So yeah, it's been nearly 30 years.
That is crazy.
Since a team, and it was big Alex Ferguson, who had replaced big Ron Atkinson, that gave Aberdeen the league title win. So he was obviously coming, I think back then, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Scottish League was a bit more comparable to the English League, not necessarily in competitiveness, but in terms of standard.
Well, I think it was more competitive.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't imagine for a second that it would be this long before it was competitive again.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes that achievement even more amazing.
Yeah, that's the thing. It truly is like... Obviously, with hindsight, you look back and you can kind of make your own narrative. But there does seem to be something in, like, just Ferguson's ability to...
squeeze a league title.
Yeah. It's just amazing, really. But Ferguson starts to improve United with a 1-0 win against Liverpool, but not before he lost his first game in charge to an unglamorous Oxford United 2-0.
They were right back then, though, weren't
they? Yeah, Fergie comes in, he loses his first game 2-0, but then he unfortunately does what Fergie starts to do, which is knock Liverpool off their perch. Because, he starts to improve United, he gets a 1-0 win against Liverpool in December, which leads to a top-of-the-table fight between Arsenal and Everton. So Arsenal now start to emerge, and despite the fact they don't end up in the top three, Arsenal, for long periods of the season, are the ones challenging Everton.
This is
Everton.
The beginning, yeah, I mean, because they weren't, Arsenal were a nowhere team for most of this decade.
That's
weren't
right,
they? We barely
yeah.
talked about Arsenal.
I think they had one cup final about 10 years previously, so, 4 years previously.
No, you're right. The Sunderland final.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
That's confusing. Alan Sunderland final.
Yeah.
But yeah, Arsenal were nowhere really, and yet they finished the decade as league champions, don't they?
That's right.
The whole
yeah.
Michael Thomas thing. So yeah, them beginning to grow a team. Michael Thomas, David Rowcastle, Alan Smith, you know, people like John Lukic, people like that.
Yeah.
Must have been beginning to happen here.
Another signing that happens at the end of the season, just to jump ahead slightly, is that Arsenal signed Wimbledon defender Nigel Winterburn for 400k.
Oh,
so
really?
Again, they're starting to build that very famous Arsenal defence. There's a young Tony Adams that starts to emerge this season.
Did I not
as well.
See Tony Adams? Yeah.
But yeah, so it's kind of, you're right, this is the green shoots of hope for Arsenal. John Aldridge, we spoke about last week, but he joins Liverpool midway through the season because Ian Rush's transfer to Juventus is agreed.
Yeah.
But I didn't realise he was agreed at midway through the season, but he was loaned to Liverpool for the rest of this season. So he stays at Liverpool. So you have a brief spell where Aldridge and Rush are up top for Liverpool.
Well, interesting, because I got a bit on this next week.
Yeah.
Aldridge is sub only.
Is that right?
Yeah, he doesn't start with Rush for the last 10 games of the season. Yeah.
How bizarre.
Yeah. That's and yet really Rush strange. Endorsed him as his replacement, but he didn't play alongside him.
How weird.
Yeah, obviously coming on as a sub he did, but
sure.
They didn't start them.
Wow, very interesting. But obviously Aldridge goes on to be a really good striker for Liverpool.
Brilliant striker,
Rushy obviously doesn't necessarily work out at Juventus and we see him back again, but you know.
You can't resist him.
It was like playing in a different country, as Rushy once said.
It's like you're contracted to say that.
I know,
that
I can't help it. it is ridiculous. But yeah, so it's kind of, like you say, it's a strange moment where you know Rushy's going, but he's still there. And yeah, interesting that he keeps kind of Aldridge out of the starting lineup. But he was signed very much as a replacement for Rush.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine it's more, I doubt Rush was keeping him out. It's probably more likely Beardsley, who was there by then, or Barnes.
No, I think Beardsley, we sign, at the end of the season. I think we get him.
Oh, you might be right, yeah, because the rebuilding would have been after the season, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so it's at the end of the season that Liverpool would break the British transfer record by paying £1.9 million. Yeah. I didn't realise he was a British transfer record for a small time, but almost £2 million for Peter Beardsley. So yeah, at the end of the season, and again, we're kind of touching on this, I was going to mention them at the end, but Liverpool also signed John Barnes from Watford at the end of the season.
Yeah, because the rebuilding happened after the season.
Yeah,
it was amazing in the way Liverpool work. This season was seen as a abject failure because they didn't win the league or the cup.
Exactly. Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? You finish second in the league and everyone's disappointed.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you're right. This is kind of a new look Liverpool starting to get formed. As the new year is well into full swing, Easter comes around and the clash between Liverpool and Spurs adds some heat to the title race as Tottenham beat Liverpool 1-0. Mm. So Liverpool were still top of the league though by Easter with a 6-point advantage over their nearest rivals Everton, who have two games in hand on them and a better goal difference.
Yeah.
So Liverpool top by virtue of having played more games. But this is where Tottenham are 14 points off the top, which is obviously a hell of a thing. But they have 5 games in hand to try and close the gap. So it's amazing that it ends up like being that backlogged. Yeah. You'd never ever
have
that.
I assume that's FA Cup replays. It has to be.
It must be. That's the only thing I can think of.
Final. They had no Europe, so it had to be FA Cup or League Cup replays, I guess.
But it's crazy. Yeah. But also back then, if it was, you know, terrible weather over Christmas, the grounds and the stadiums weren't quite what they are now. Like, you could get a top flight game called off for a waterlogged pitch, which seems mental now, doesn't it?
It's
the
crazy,
idea that
it'd
be like, it's rained too much, we're off. Like, obviously you still get that in the lower leagues, but for
top, it wouldn't happen now.
It's very strange. But at the other end of the table, somewhat surprisingly, it's Villa and Newcastle that find themselves in a relegation dogfight alongside Man City, Oxford, Charlton, Leicester and QPR. At the end of the season, it's really interesting to see that basically, there's about 4 points separating 8 of the bottom teams. Back then, I don't know if you'll remember this, but 4 teams would be up for relegation, 3 automatic, but the fourth place was a playoff.
I was going to mention this, So it happens next season as well.
I know
this
happens in Germany to this day. I didn't realise this was
an
English
playoff
thing.
The fourth from bottom plays off against third, who finishes third in Division 2.
Third in Division 2?
Yeah, well, that's
not
what happened.
Fourth in Division 2?
No, weirdly. Yeah, I thought maybe they were just readjusting the numbers next year.
That's what
happens next year.
Right.
Middlesbrough play Chelsea in this playoff final.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever wins either goes up or goes down. Crazy.
No, it is mental. So that's what happens this year as well. We'll get to that towards the end. But Liverpool would lose to Wimbledon in the league to narrow the gap between them and their Merseyside rivals. And they would continue their stuttering form by losing to Arsenal 2-1 in the League Cup final.
Oh,
so Arsenal win their first bit of silverware for a while by beating Liverpool, who like you say, kind of are looking at themselves thinking, oh, this isn't the Liverpool.
I mean, still one of the best teams in the country. Yeah, sure. But yeah.
But Kenny Dalglish starting to put together his version of Liverpool. But nevertheless, congratulations to Arsenal. They win the League Cup final. The momentum truly shifts towards the end of April as Tottenham lose to West Ham. Man United complete the league double over Liverpool. Cheers, Fergie. Thanks for that.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, exactly. Which allows Everton to take the top spot for the first time in over 3 months, courtesy of a win over relegation candidates Aston Villa.
There we go.
So the beginning of May, so going in towards the end of the season now, sees everything start to fall into place as Villa, Leicester and Man City look set to be relegated, while Charlton are fighting to stay in the top flight and make it into the relegation playoff. Everton would win the league despite positive results for Liverpool and Tottenham, and they would take their revenge for having lost out on the title the season before by only 2 points. The Toffees would go on to win this league by 9.
Nice.
Yeah. So
run away with it.
I think when we spoke about Everton previously, they had had one league win where they kind of petered out. I think they lost 5 of their last 7 games I think 2 years previous.
Yeah.
But that they've clearly learned from that, and this time they just go on to win their remaining games and win by 9 points. Coventry would face cup specialist Tottenham Hotspur in the FA Cup final and achieve something of an upset with a 3-2 win in extra time over Spurs.
What a game.
Yeah, so that's the Coventry team that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, despite Spurs having the squad they had, they weren't able to get it over the line, which is funny, really. Obviously, they do win a fair bit of cup silverware. But for Coventry, who had been in a relegation fight for most of the season.
Yeah, I mean, they were in front twice, Tottenham. It was a hell of a cup. I know we've covered it, but it was a hell of a cup final. So Coventry did brilliantly to win that final. It's seen as one of the greatest cup finals of all time. So, But in reflection of what happened in the league, it's even bigger,
exactly. And then finally, Charlton would secure their first division survival by beating second division Leeds over 2 legs, meaning that Leicester, Man City and Villa would fall out of the division.
Amazing.
So yeah, it's crazy because did you say it was Leeds next season as well?
No, Middlesbrough-Chelsea.
Middlesbrough-Chelsea, that's right. So Charlton. I actually quite like the idea of a relegation playoff.
It's quite cool. I wonder when it disappeared because I don't remember it.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it as we go through these years. No, because I don't, you know.
I wonder if the Premier League got rid of it. I don't remember it at all.
No, it's really bizarre, but they still do it in Germany to this day, and I actually quite like it, but I don't think it should be over 2 legs. I think it should be
a one-off game
because then you give a bit of jeopardy to get, like, for a championship team. Over 2 legs, they're probably not going to get.
They shouldn't. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
Get
yeah.
past a Premier League team, but a one-off, like, winner takes all. I think there's great jeopardy in that. Like, bottom two.
Made for TV.
Bottom two should get relegated, and in the third place, you might be able to secure your survival by beating Middlesbrough or Leeds or.
I'm assuming they just
Leicester.
Don't do it because it's seen as not fair.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, over the course of a season, and also you've got the playoffs. That's the drama in the second division, isn't it?
Is it the £1 billion game they call it, or whatever it is? Yeah, I mean, that's great.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I'm guessing that is effectively
you'd lose
out on the jeopardy of the playoffs.
Yeah,
because that is essentially it's just played within the second division now, isn't it?
You just don't play a Premier League team. I think that's the thing that you're missing there is like a potential someone who's finished fourth from bottom has one game to save themselves.
And also, if you've stunk out the division, if you've been, let's say, Burnley this year or like Sheffield United, you've been terrible all season and you managed to scrape a 1-0 win over
Grimsby.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like, oh, we got you for another year. Cheers then. So yeah, maybe it's not a good idea on reflection. But with that, let's just mention some significant others.
You just cannot write scripts like this.
So despite their success, Everton would obviously not be able to represent England on the European stage thanks to removal of all the English teams from European competitions following the Heysel disaster.
Bastards.
And I was thinking about this, and I'm trying to find a way to sensitively talk about it. So obviously the reasons for the ban are horrible, cost people's lives. I'm not trying to jeopardise that.
Mm.
If it had been for another reason, though, I do love the idea that Liverpool went, Everton are going to be winning the next few seasons. Let's stop them from getting to Europe. Like, it's almost like the biggest long con of, like, can we stitch up Everton?
It's shithouse, really.
Obviously, the reasons it happened are tragic and terrible.
I think the thing about Heysel was the last in a long list.
Yeah, it's the straw that broke the camel's back.
It was the culture of British football.
Yeah.
Which kind of, I feel like the ban was correct. I don't hear many people talk about how unjust it was.
No.
Just that it was gutting that a team like Everton, really were the main team, I guess you could argue Coventry, but the main team that missed out in that 5-year period was ultimately a team whose rivals were the main, what you would call it, like, the person that did the wrong or the team that did the wrong or the fans that did the wrong. But ultimately, it was British football in general.
Yeah.
It seemed out of control.
Yeah, and even, I haven't mentioned them in this report, but there was still ongoing...
Of course there was,
riots, ongoing crowd trouble. I do mention, actually, I'll mention it now as part of the significant others. So Luton Town were banned for the League Cup.
That's right, yeah.
For refusing to allow any away fans to any of their games, which is crazy.
Yeah.
To, like, literally put a blanket ban on, there are just no away fans. You're just crippling the culture of football. But you can also kind of understand why...
That's just to avoid crowd trouble.
Yeah, that's right. Wow. So yeah, Kenilworth Road were not allowed to host away fans at all. And as a result, they were banned from the League Cup, which seems strange.
Only the League Cup.
That's all I could find. If, you know, if
I've read that too. Yeah,
if there's a listener out there that knows any more details, let us know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is crazy. So clearly fan trouble was still, even after Heysel, is still ongoing. Yeah, it's a bit sad, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Everton, unfortunately, despite having a great team and creating their own mini period of history, they didn't get to represent England European stage.
Yep.
An English exodus to Scotland would begin, though, as Rangers under the domestic titan Graham Souness.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
He begins this English exodus with Chris Woods, Neil Woods, Terry Butcher, joining Jimmy Phillips, Graham Roberts, Colin West north of the border, and then Rangers would add Mark Walters and Ray Wilkins the following season.
Mark Walters.
So it's crazy that, like, basically seven out, or like between five and seven of the starting Rangers lineup were British, or English, I should say.
Yeah.
Following Graham Souness, which is interesting because, again, Scottish football was not the butt of the joke that it is nowadays. Like, I think that Rangers team in particular were incredibly strong.
Yeah.
Over that kind of brief period.
I don't remember them. I know they weren't. Were Scottish teams in Europe?
Yeah, so Heysel was just a ban for English teams, but you're right. I don't think Rangers or even Celtic did anything in Europe in terms of getting to, like, semi-finals and finals. I think they represented but didn't do much.
It's a little bit of the... It's how people tend to measure, like, you know, this on, you know, oh, Celtic are dominant, Rangers are dominant.
Sure.
Like, where have they got in Europe?
Yeah.
And not necessarily that they need to win it,
no,
because I think that might be unfair, but they never really seem to get anywhere.
No, very occasionally. And again, Rangers would get to a Europa League final or a semi-final.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of kind of success-ish. Obviously, Rangers had the European, what was it, their first European final in however many years, when they played Frankfurt in the Europa League final 2022. So that was only a couple of years
ago,
a season ago. But they lost on penalties after, I think, they drew 1-1.
Right.
So yeah, other than that, I think it has been probably a decade before. But yeah, Giovanni Van Bron- like, Gerrard had done well in the Europa League run when he was manager there, but I think they went out in the semi-finals.
Right, okay.
But yeah, and Van Bronckhorst, they did really well, got to a European final. So,
but on the whole...
Yeah, yeah, we're talking about one thing.
Rangers won 10 in a row, Celtic probably did something similar, and yet they didn't really progress...
That's right.
...to any significance in Europe, which... I don't know, if you're a Scottish football fan, maybe you would find that unfair, but that seems to be the modern day barometer of where you're at.
Yeah, and ultimately the deck is stacked against them nowadays with money, and, like, Scottish football is even struggling to get a competitive TV deal because there are literally, even north of the border, there are broadcasters that are like, we're not going to pay for Scottish football because fans that care about it go to the games.
And
internationally there's no interest in it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's harsh, really.
Yeah,
but,
right.
In rather sad news, Graham Taylor would resign after 11 years as Watford manager to take over at Aston Villa.
Yeah, who went to Villa. Yeah,
they had been relegated. So during his time at Watford, it's worth remembering that Taylor took the club up from the fourth division to the first.
Yeah.
He finished league runners up in their first top flight season and reached the FA Cup final in their second.
Amazing.
Just arguably next to probably Sir Elton John. The most important person in Watford's history.
Yeah. Well, ultimately got him the England job.
Yeah, really. Of course. Yeah,
He won what he did at Villa.
No.
Not so much, but certainly Watford. I think that's what turned the heads of the FA that at that time were only looking for English managers.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Taylor was the obvious one.
Mm-hmm. Middlesbrough and Wolves were in dire financial difficulties, and Wolves were only saved from bankruptcy after Wolverhampton Council and Asda Supermarket agreed to pay off their £3 million debts. I haven't spent any time looking into it because I was running out of time to actually get this report done. But Asda stepped in to save Wolves. Is Asda, like, known as a... It's not like a Midlands company, is it?
I thought it was like wasn't it Jack Maynard, the guy that built Molyneux?
Or right.
I thought that... is he something to do with Asda? Maybe he's something to do with Asda.
I've got to find out now. Right, let's... Sometime later.
Sometime later.
Okay, so this is it's really charming. So this is from the ShropshireStar.com. so credit to them. But Peter Creed, this is basically a tribute to him after he passed away in 2022. But essentially, Peter Creed was a driving force behind the Wolves Players Association. He died on aged 90 after short illness. He was a childhood fan of Wolves, and he's part of the action group formed in the mid-80s to bring an end to the disastrous Batty Brothers regime, which saw the club plunge into the fourth division for the...
Batty Brothers.
I tried to carry on, but I can't believe that their name were actually the Batty Brothers. But nevertheless, the group, which also then included Wolverhampton Council leader John Bird, encouraged Wolves creditors to take out a winding up position against the club, forcing Mohamed and Mahmoud Batty to relinquish control.
Wow.
The club was then taken over by a consortium made of the Wolverhampton councilman John Bird, supermarket giant Asda, and then property developer Gallagher Estates. Estates. Mr. Creed was also well known with the bookies after placing a small bet on Wolves to win each home game 4-1.
What?
What a strange quirk.
Yeah. Where did they pick that little info nugget from?
Who knew? But there we go. So thanks to the ShropshireStar.com for giving us more info on that. But yeah, very interesting that essentially the club was saved thanks to a consortium that was made last minute.
Cheers, Asda.
Yeah, cheers, Asda. Every little helps. So
that's Tesco.
Damn, what is it? Oh, that's Asda price. Ding, ding.
That's Asda price.
That's the one,
and
isn't
the pat your bum.
Yeah, that's right. Nottingham Forest would play Brighton and Hove Albion in the second round League Cup match. And here's an interesting bit of info for you. Forest defender Stuart Pearce ran out to play against Brighton before realising that his brother was officiating the game as one of the linesmen.
What?
He had no idea until the start of the match.
No way.
Incredible. Would that be allowed nowadays?
Nowadays. God, imagine freaking Pep or Klopp kicking off about that.
But how amazing is that? Stuart Pearce has run out to play against Brighton. He looks over the touchline. He's like,
all right, mate.
All right. Absolutely incredible. Is that Ray Pearce, my brother? Also, think of the amount, like, Stuart Pearce about to run through on goal. He's going to score for Forest. Lines and flags up. Remember when he nicked my Lego when we were four? Payback.
Guide, you little prick.
Yeah, incredible. Final things. Liverpool will play Celtic in an unofficial British Championship match in the United Arab Emirates.
Wow.
So, back in Christmas.
Back then, blow.
That's what I mean. Crazy. Again, I had no idea this was something that had previously been done.
Wow.
So, the match finished 1-1 after 90 minutes and Liverpool won 4-2 on penalties to win the first ever Dubai Super Cup. So in December, Liverpool and Celtic flew out to play it. Yeah, really strange, but it is kind of like, oh, so this isn't a new thing. I thought it was a Fandangle thing. But to finish off, it's just some notable transfers as we start to see kind of modern football begin. So I mentioned Liverpool signing John Barnes. Glenn Hoddle would leave at the end of the season from Spurs to move to which French club?
Monaco.
Very good. England goalkeeper Pilter Sheaton is what I was about to say.
Pilter Sheaton.
Good old Pilter Sheaton.
England's number two.
I need to register, but don't make it too obvious. I'm Mr. P. Shilton. No. Peter S. He would leave Southampton for newly promoted Derby County in a deal reported to be worth up to £1 million, the highest fee for a goalkeeper in British football at the time. David Seaman would sign for QPR for $225,000. This is an interesting one. So Wimbledon signed 21-year-old midfielder Vinny Jones, which is interesting. Right. From conference side, Wealdstone for $10,000.
Yeah,
he went straight in. Yeah. He went straight into the first team. He went from conference.
Well, he probably threatened someone then.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I'm looking for some kind of footballing reason.
I think he smashed Dave Bassett's head in a car.
You what, mate? You put me with the reserves.
All right, Vinny, how's it going?
Never mind the all right, Vinny, how's it going? Bollocks. What you been saying?
What are you talking about?
What's all this I've been hearing? Some shit about you think you're harder than me.
Where have you heard this?
Some extra I've been doing a scene with said he heard it over here. You've been trying to impress the extras by telling them you're harder than me.
I haven't said anything.
You think you're well hard, don't you?
Are you hard? No.
No, you're not. If I hear you slag me off anymore, I'll come over here and I'll show you what really hard is.
Do you know what really hard is? Beating me up and that.
Yeah. Do you know what really hard is?
Beating him up and that. Kicking him in the bollocks. No need to be specific.
All right.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I hadn't thought about that. But I did think that was amazing that he came from the conference and started
ironically,
in the first division.
Wimbledon probably came across him three seasons before.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's pretty meteoric, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing stuff. Wolves would sign Steve Ball from their neighbours West Bromwich Albion.
Steve Ball.
For $35,000. And for what he did at Wolves, you've
brilliant.
Got to think that might be their best ever signing.
He got into the England team.
Yeah, he did.
From the second division.
Yeah, that's why
incredible.
I always remember him.
Yeah.
But yeah, Bully, as he's known to the locals. Bit of Bully. Love a bit of Bully. Yeah, absolutely incredible. So I also mentioned Arsenal would sign Nigel Winterburn, Glenn Hoddle.
Done that twice.
Arsenal would strengthen their ranks by signing Leicester City striker Alan Smith.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is the putting together of that championship.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then finally, and I really wanted to end on this note, soon to be Sir Alex Ferguson would pay Celtic $850,000 for prolific striker Brian McClair. Brian Ferguson McClair.
That's right. We have no further details on that transfer because there was a massive NDA.
We need to get a gag order signed now. What happened in Scotland stays in Scotland, all right? No wonder Alex left the Aberdeen job. I need to get out of here. He's getting too many questions about Brian McClair.
If fairness to Brian McClair, we mock him, and he did become a bit of a mockery in the 90s, but he was quality here, and we need to say that he was quality.
Very
obviously we make the joke, and it is a joke about the fact that he may well be Alex Ferguson's love child, and that's why he,
allegedly
that's why he got in the United team.
I like the way that we had to explicitly say that for our lawyers.
Well, I just feel our lawyers. I feel bad for Brian because he was quality.
Yeah.
And in fairness, Ferguson rated him all the way through his United career, but I think as we were getting into the football in the 90s, he was coming to the end of his career.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit harder to see his quality.
Yeah. But it's funny. I think sometimes one of the biggest compliments you can kind of give to a player is, did you play under Sir Alex Ferguson through the different generations, through the different cycles? Like, he talks about 4-year cycles, doesn't he, of refreshing the squad. And if you can stick around through that, there's a lot to be said for Ferguson basically going, no, you're still one of my guys.
Yeah. I mean, he was still there. I know it from the clip. He was still there when Beckham scored against Wimbledon. The
is
long
he really?
Run. Yeah, because he's the first one to congratulate him.
No way.
I mean, it's near the end of his career.
Yeah,
but you think,
sure.
What's this, 87 he transfers to United. So he's there for 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
that is
a massive show of the faith that Ferguson had in him.
That is incredible.
Or the hold that McClair had.
Oh, you want to sell me, do you, Alex?
Dad?
Let's see what you say after a paternity test, shall we? And with this ridiculous running joke, we're going to call it an end there. But join us next week to find out who's going to win the English First Division.